Move your training into a new chapter. Stay ahead of your competition with the Kinetic Link. The Kinetic Link is a patented lightweight resistance harness designed to develop and strengthen movement patterns for sports performance and rehabilitation. The world's first full body portable training system. Check it out at www.thekineticlink.com or on Instagram at Kinetic Linking.
Hey friends, thanks for joining us here on Real Talk with Coach Morton and friends. If you're watching on YouTube, you automatically know something's up. And if you're listening, if you're a good enough listener, you're probably saying, wait a minute, this is not Coach Morton talking. That's right, friends. My name is Mike Cunningham. I am the host of the Gill Athletics Track and Field Connections podcast, and I'm taking over. I snatched the microphone from Brandon, and I'm actually going to flip the script on him. He has been bringing some just absolute amazing podcast, some amazing interviews with some amazing coaches out there. And I decided, dadgummit, it was time we got to know Brandon, your host, just a little bit better. So friends, help me welcome to the Coach Morton Show, Brandon Morton. Brandon, how are you, man?
Thank you, man. Doing pretty good. I appreciate you coming on and taking my show over and just backing it.
Well, so just so you know, listener, this is 100% my idea. I floated it to Brandon and really just want to really lift up Brandon to you. He has been bringing you so much value. I just want to get to know, help you get to know Brandon a little bit better, his coaching career, and really focus on what in the world, why did he start a podcast and has brought just so much value to the track and field community. So Brandon, maybe let's get started with, you ran track at Winthrop University. That's in South Carolina. You're from South Carolina, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm originally from Greenwood, South Carolina, about 2.5 hours from Rock Hill, South Carolina, where Winthrop's located. And Winthrop is about probably 20-25 minutes from Charlotte, North Carolina. So yeah, I ran at Winthrop for 4 years.
And what events did you run there, and how was your college career?
I came in as a high jumper and eventually started doing the sprints and was on the relay. So I was 200, 400. My main event was the high jump. I won conference one my sophomore year, went to the first ever NCAA. It was regionals back then. Now it's first round. And was on the 4x1 that went. I started off as a high jumper and eventually just, you know, that was the era of, I like to call it more of an athlete era where we just didn't really, I didn't want to specialize necessarily. I looked at myself as an athlete. So, I mean, I remember begging Coach Paxson, man, you got me running, doing all this running in practice. Let me do some sprinting at a meet, you know. And so he eventually put me in the 400. And from there, Coach Schreiner started training me up after my sophomore year. And eventually I started doing the 200, 400 relays along with the 4x1, along with the high jump. So, yeah, sprinter and jumper.
That's a pretty rare combination. I was a high jump coach myself before coming to Gill. I can't think of a single high jumper, not a single high jumper I allowed to be on the 4x1 and 4x4, nor that I would have wanted on the two relays. So you must have been, I love that, the way you described it, the athletic type, you know, like, hey man, I'll throw the shot put on my hand. Maybe I'll throw the shot put a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't really consider myself I was just a competitor. The day that I PR'd in the high jump, which was a 6'10" jump, I won conference. I was literally getting in the blocks for the 400, and they were starting the first jumps of the high jump. So I ran my little 48, which was a PR, walked over to the high jump with no legs, and ended up hitting a huge PR and winning conference that year. So it wasn't, I don't want people to think I was some guy running 52 in the 400 and high jumping 6 feet or something like that. I wasn't world class by any means, but I wasn't, I wasn't going to go to any meeting. Anybody say he sucks, So
there's plenty of coaches listening right now that were like, oh yeah, I'll take a 6'10" all day. I'll take a 48 all day, man. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun, but yeah, I dabbled in the sprints and jumps.
Did you have any other high jumpers in your high jump squad that did relays as well, or were you kind of the anomaly? Yeah.
No, right now, we had a guy my freshman year, Rod Lord, who now does training in Columbia. He kind of got me started with it. He was a 48-0 guy. He high jumped about 6'6", 6'7", and could long jump 23, triple jump 48. He was just an athlete, you know. And I always wanted to follow in his footsteps. I won't lie. He was somebody I looked up to. He was a senior when I was a freshman. And I kind of wanted to continue what he was doing already before I got there and kind of carry that sprinter jumper flag, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And what were you majoring in, and where was coaching in your headspace at this point? Did you know you wanted to be a coach, or were other things floating around right now?
Man, I started off, I was going to do computer science, and I took a class that was not even computer science. It was just your basic Microsoft class where they would teach you all the Microsoft apps, Excel, Word, and, you know, me being me, I'm like, God, this is hard. I'm not going to major in computer science. So I'm like, you know, I talked to my advisor. I'm like, I need something else. She's like, that's not even a computer science class. I'm like, I was immature at the time. So I ended up going into sport management and, you know, was talking about being a sports agent or facility manager or something like that. And, you know, deep down, that's, I still didn't want to do that, but it was what was available. Coaching was nowhere near in my mind at that moment. Around the time I graduated, Coach Schreiner, my sprints coach, I remember talking to her, and she said, coaching is so fun because I can be a kid all day. I'm outside, and I'm having a good time. And I was like, man, I'd love to do that. I just didn't think I, you know, had the chops to do it. And eventually she kind of pointed me in the right direction of what I needed to do, which was get my level one and try to get a grad assistant position somewhere. And I procrastinated for a while and didn't do it. And my wife, she really, like, one day slapped me upside the head and, you know, was like, hey, if you got paid today, if you don't want, I was working at Sprint, a call center in Charlotte. And she said, if you don't want to work at Sprint anymore, you pay for your level one certification right now and you book your hotel room. Wow. And, you know, from that day forward, I've always been the type of person to not talk about it. Just do it.
Also the day you knew she needed to be your wife?
Yeah. Yeah, there are a couple signs, but that was one of the bigger signs that, you know, let me know that she's probably the one. She's going to keep me straight. You know, she's not going to just tell me what I want to hear. She's going to tell me what I need to hear. And that was probably the best advice she gave me that day. And I booked my hotel in, I believe it was in Raleigh, North Carolina, and paid for my level one. And, you know, we went up there together, and she stayed in the hotel, and I did the certification, and you know, the rest is history. I went on ahead and started coaching.
So what was your first full-time coaching job?
Campbell University under Dr. Jim Patrick.
Yeah, the Camels, baby. Absolutely.
Yeah, Campbell. So in Buies Creek, North Carolina. Now, this was before they had a track. That was such an informative, information, knowledge-rich time period for me, just working with Coach Patrick. You know, just not only about track, but things about learning about manhood, and, you know, just different things he taught me. He didn't just give me information. He taught me where to look for information. You know, I learned how to find the information, decipher through what was right for my situation and what was not right for my situation. So I can never repay Coach Patrick for not only giving me the first opportunity to, and he'll say, I didn't give you anything, you earned it. But, you know, he allotted me that opportunity to start something that was a dream of mine. And not only that, but he just taught me so much about life and about the power of just knowledge, just knowing things, you know, and knowing where to find it. And so I'll never be able to repay him for that. That was just a very fun time. We did a lot of great things with that team. We didn't have a track. We didn't have a track to go to. We literally ran on a grass field, and we had about a 70-meter straight with a pole vault pin on one end and a long jump pin on the other. And it was a concrete slab, and this was before I got there. He got patches of track from what was left over at Winthrop, and made a short sprint, pole vault, long jump runway. And that's what we used for speed work, 4x1 handoffs. You know, it was completely homemade. And we produced guys that went to nationals, multiple first round qualifiers, conference champions. So I really learned a lot under Coach Patchell. And
I love the no excuses type attitude. I mean, you had every excuse in the world. No track to go to. Well, okay, we can get some scrap track over here. Okay, let's build that then. Let's figure it out. Man, that's such a great attitude.
Yeah, I mean, I had two high jumpers that were 5'2" when I got there. They both ended up going 5'8", 5'9". But we didn't have enough runway. So their approaches were really tight. So every time I got to meet, coaches would be like, "You just open the run up a little bit more." I'm like, "I can't."
You know, you got no idea.
You don't know how we got to this point. But, you know, we couldn't make excuses. Coach Patchell's not going to make excuses. And I probably wouldn't have had a job if I did make excuses under him. So we just, the motto was find a way. And we did.
Well, you certainly did earn that first opportunity. I love his attitude with that as well. And he taught you so much. The first thing I thought of when you talked about how much he taught you was, did he teach you why a school in Buies Creek, North Carolina, had the logo of a camel? What?
I think it had something to do with endurance. Like, camels can go so long without water or food or anything like that. And so I guess it has something to do with endurance and I don't know, just endurance and being able to withstand and a lot without much resources.
Campbell, when I was at Troy back in the late 90s, Campbell was in our conference, so we always had to go up, and it was always like the camels. I don't know that any, you know, I can't even think of a single school, like Arizona maybe, but they don't have camels either. What in the world? So where did you go after Campbell?
I went to East Tennessee State University under the late, great Coach David Walker. I was under him for 2 years there. We won a men's indoor and a men's outdoor team title. Had a lot of success there. It was much easier than, you know, Campbell having an indoor facility and, you know, having a local high school track at Science Hill to go train at when it got hot. I had some amazing athletes. We had a women's 4x1 that was ranked 24th going into first round, had the last spot, and we ended up leaving ranked 10th and went to championships. Ifridge Alberg broke the Suriname national record there. He ran like a 10-2. So we had a lot of good athletes there, a lot of good kids. That was fulfilling as well, just to be able to finally work with some athletes and, you know, not really have any excuses, or, you know, there wasn't a lack of resources there. So I was under Coach Walker the first 2 years, and he retired. Coach Watts came in the third year, and to be under him wasn't amazing. Somebody that's been under, you know, Bill Webb at Tennessee and worked with Vince Anderson and, you know, all the greats he's worked with over at University of Tennessee. Learned a lot from him, still talk to him to this day. I've been lucky enough to be under some really good head coaches, between Coach Patchell, Coach Walker, Coach Watts. And so I spent 3 years at East Tennessee State as the sprints and hurdles coach there. Then I moved on to South Carolina State under Tim Langford, who's now the head coach.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, I've been under a –
dude.
Yeah, I've been with some really – I've been blessed to be with some really good head coaches that that, you know, not only know the sport, but they're good people. I've been under a lot of head coaches that are just good people. They're good coaches, but they're even better men. And under Tim Langford at South Carolina State, that gave me an HBCU experience, and it got me closer to home. I was kind of longing to be back in South Carolina, and that was the perfect opportunity. So when Tim called me, I was like, "Hey, you know, I'm there. Plus, I can learn. You know, I want to learn what you're doing to get guys from 22 to 20.7 a year." And so, you know, I learned a lot about movement under him, movement efficiency, and just a lot of the things that you don't necessarily get in the books necessarily. You know, there's the saying, once you know the rules, you can break them. I learned that under him. All of all of the things that he was doing with his sprinters at Charleston Southern, he brought that to South Carolina State, and I was his top recruiter guy. You know, I signed Demeek Kemp, and man, he has gotten everything out of Demeek. I mean, and Terrell Richards has done an amazing job with him. So, you know, to be with Tim at that time was truly, you know, it was kind of like stacking information on top of information, and it got I got my focus was so laser sharp just listening to him and watching him in practice. Oklahoma's really got them a good one with him. I can't wait to see what he does there. And I mean, Coach Patchell went from Campbell to Arkansas State and won numerous conference championships. Coach Walker, he's done so much, and you know, obviously Coach Watts has done a lot. So I'm waiting to see. I can't wait to see what Tim does at Oklahoma. I know he's going to do a great job. Yeah, I've been under some really good head coaches. I've had some great experiences.
Do you come with a posture of learning from each one of them, or did you come with, hey, this is my sprints and hurdles or whatever area you were over, I'm going to do my thing, and you know what, I understand you've been around for a while, but what am I going to learn from you?
Oh, no. I mean, I'm more of a shut up and listen. You know, obviously Tim was, you know, when I was at East Tennessee State, I mean, it was my sprint. I mean, nobody else on the staff was really a sprints guy, sprints hurdles guy. But when I got to South Carolina State with Tim, it was kind of whatever he wanted me to do. I really took on coaching the Maltese and cross country and the short hurdle, short and long hurdles. And he would handle the sprints and the jumps. And also, obviously, the daily stuff that a head coach tackles. But yeah, it was more so just listening to him. I mean, if he wanted my input on something, obviously I would give him my opinion. I wasn't that void of knowledge to where I couldn't give my input, but you know, and he wanted my input on things. And you know, I would just, a lot of times he would write, there'd be Monday, he'd come in, he'd write the workouts for the week then, and we'd discuss it. You know, he'd have his major emphasis and minor emphasis for the week or for the mesocycle or whatever, and we sit down and talk about it, and I give him my opinion. Sometimes we'll agree, sometimes we didn't, and you know, but I'm like, it's your program, man. I'm gonna give you mine, because it might spark something, you know, in your brain. But you know, he always had a good reason as to why we move forward with things. So him, Coach Bone, who I've interviewed on my podcast, Jared Bone, he was the strength guy and the throws guy there. He's got his PhD. Very, very smart. Me and him worked together on strength and conditioning there. So I would, you know, we had a very simple strength and conditioning program. We both believed in getting kids really strong. I mean, obviously safely and carefully progressing them as long as technique was fine, but just believed in periodization and periodizing things the right way on the track in relation to in the weight room, things of that nature. Big John in the weight room, who's now at East Carolina University. That's the thing, I worked with some good strength coaches. I mean, you know, I didn't get to work with Dr. Stone and Meg Stone, but I got to communicate with them a lot at East Tennessee State, and then got to South Carolina State. Big John, who's now at East Carolina, and I don't even know what John's last name. We just always call him
Big John. Big John. But,
he's at East Carolina now. Everywhere he goes, championships follow. So it's just crazy. So, you know, yeah, I've been able to work with some good coaches, but I've always been the type to sit back and pay respect, really, to guys that I look up to that I feel like know more than me. I'm not going to try to talk them down. Like I said, if they ask my opinion, I'll give it to them.
So amazing coaches that you've been able to work with, like you mentioned. I mean, as soon as you went from Jim Patchell, who I've known for quite a while, to David Walker, I was like, oh, man, there's two right there. If that had been the only two, I'd have been so impressed. But you had a George Watson there, a Tim Langford. I mean, come on, man. So you go from South Carolina State to Converse College as the head coach. Mm-hmm. What did working with those coaches, that's a big jump at a young age. How did that help working under such really legends at this point? And I know, you know, Tim would smack me down by calling him a legend, because he's he knows he wants to prove so much more. He's going to do so much more, but he has done an amazing job. So working under these guys that are just awesome, what has that done to help you become a head coach yourself?
I mean, just watching them day to day. You know, not only what they did well, but mistakes that they might have made. And they'll tell me if they make mistakes. Coach, I remember doing a high jump practice at Campbell, and you know, this is my first year coaching, and Patrick walks up and says, "You should do this, this, and this with her." And I'm like, okay. You know, I was like, okay, you know, whatever. So the next day he apologizes and says, "Coach, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have walked up and said what you should have done in front of her. It undercut you, and I apologize." And I'm like, I didn't even know. I didn't even care that he'd done it. But for him to say that to me, I'm a first-year GA, you know, I'm like, it just taught me so much about humility, you know, and being humble and not being – I think a lot of coaches are – they don't want to admit when they make a mistake a lot of the times. And the one thing I can say about every single coach that I've been under, from Patrick to Walker to Watts to Tim, they'll admit when they make a mistake. And that's something that I've carried with me. With my kids, I told my girls this past indoor, I made a mistake with you guys. I didn't do enough race modeling with you. You were in shape. You guys were all in shape, but you didn't know how to run the race. So that was my fault. And I told them, I said, we won't make the same mistake going in the outdoor. And I think that transparency with them is one of the reasons they appreciate. I guess they appreciate me a little bit more as a head coach. Sometimes it's the first time some of them have even run into a coach that will do that, you know. And so being under those guys taught me humility. No matter how good your kids get, just be humble, because they could be gone tomorrow. You know, the season could be over with tomorrow. That's what we're dealing with right now. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I think it's a huge character trait, you know, being able to say you're wrong. And, and I think you're right. You hit the nail on the head there. It is hard sometimes for us to admit that. However, if we look at it through our own lenses, if we start talking about someone and we go, you know what, that person, they're always right. They never, even when I know they're wrong, they never admit it. We don't trust them as much.
Exactly.
We just don't. But when that person comes up and says, like, I mean, you just told everything about Coach Patchell that we need to know, right? He came up, he made a mistake. The next day he realizes it. He could have let it go. Like you said, you're a GA. Get out of here. He's the head coach, you know? But no, he sat you down and said, "Hey man, I blew it. I messed up. I'm so sorry. I should never have done that." And what they did was, one, that gave you confidence, I bet. Like, oh, okay, that's right. He should trust me. Like, oh, wow. But two, just knowing you filed that in the back of your head and you're like, okay, I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't. When I'm a head coach one day, if I need to talk to the assistant coach, all right, I pull him to the side. Or we talk in the office the next day. "Hey, man, notice you're doing this. Mm-hmm. Let's talk it out. Maybe you should do it this way, et cetera, et cetera." But to do it in front of the kids, well, that erodes your trust with the kids and the trust between head coach and assistant coach, man. That's so huge.
The crazy thing about it was I wasn't even coaching long enough to realize really what he'd done. I was just still in the I was still in the phase of, thank you for giving me an opportunity. So whatever you say, I have no problem with. So I literally didn't even register to me. So he did that out of his own,
right.
You know, like I said, I'll forever be grateful to him for being that kind of a person more than anything. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, the rest of them, Coach Watts, Coach Walker, they were kind of the same, hard-nosed, you know, but good-hearted coaches, you know, but they make no excuses, you know, and I would think I'd take that from them. I mean, I can't make excuses it's easier to make excuses. I mean, when you don't have the biggest budget in the world and you don't have a track and all that stuff, but that's not going to help me in any kind of way. So, like I said, all those coaches, I learned a lot of valuable lessons from them, that readied me for the job. Not, you know, obviously the paperwork and the X's and O's of training and things of that nature. But I mean, we all know, for the most part, how to train athletes, you know. It's the intangibles, the things, you know, that how are you going to keep your kids motivated every day to come back when, you know, they don't get, you know, I have kids on the team, they're on a $1,000 scholarships. And, you know, they make more just going to work at Target. And so, you know, how do you keep those kids motivated? I can't. I can't go out there and coach military style. And, you know, that's another thing I learned from these guys is, you know, Tim Langford always say, you get more bees with honey than you do with vinegar or lemon or something like that, he would say. And so, you know, I work accordingly. You know, some of my kids now, I'm not a military style coach, but some of my kids, they want me to get on them a little bit more. Then I got to realize the ones that they're working after practice and they got classes and they come to practice. And, you know, I have to make adjustments for those student athletes. I think track is more of a stress reliever for them. So the last thing they want to do is come to practice and have me, you know, going off on them.
More stress.
Yeah, exactly. So
do you coach your team, especially at a Converse where you said you got kids, you know, just on 1,000 on books, things like that. Do you try to coach your team to how you were as an athlete? And what I mean by that is athletically. So do you have high jumpers that maybe do the 4x1 and other things like that? Or do you try to get specialists?
Our program is progressed over these 5 years. Initially, I've had some girls that were high jumper 4x1, but you know, last year was probably going to be the first year that we legitimately had 4 sprinters on the 4x1 and 4x4. And this year we got even more in. So we're kind of phasing out of that, because when I did that, I was, you know, it wasn't Coach Paxton put me on the 4x1 because he needed an extra leg. It was literally I could run a 100 or a 200 pretty decent. So I was a legitimate leg, you know, whereas in my situation when I was doing it here, it was more so like I need an extra leg. Somebody might have got hurt or something like that. So now we've kind of phased out of that to the point where we're a little bit more competitive. And that's not to say that it won't happen. If I get a high jumper that is one of the fastest sprinters, they could very well be on that 4x1. But, you know, I try to match the events the best I can. So a long jumpers running the sprints is, you know, more feasible. High jumpers, I like to see high jumpers hurdle, you know, and in order to be a good female hurdle, because that's what we are, we're all girls right now, we're going to go to men's fall 21, but right now, all women, most high jumpers make good hurdlers, or most jumpers, period, make good hurdlers, and if you're a hurdler, you got to do a good amount of speed work, and if we do enough and you're pretty fast, you may go on at 4x1.
You mentioned earlier about, you know, nothing's ever given. The season could be taken at any minute. And you're right, we experienced that this year at the indoor national championships and no outdoor championships. And even today, we don't know what's going to happen this upcoming year. The coronavirus season, the lack thereof, did allow, though, we got some value out of this as a track and field community. You started the Real Talk with Coach Morton and Friends. So what did you do this for, man? Why are we here? Why did you start a friggin' podcast?
Man, I think there's a couple reasons. You know, I'm big on information and just trying to help others. I wanted to have some sort of a platform that younger coaches, when I got into coaching, we had the Canadian Athletics. Patrick gave me this podcast the login to this podcast. I don't think he's even up anymore. It was like the Canadian Athletics something. And I had podcasts from Vince Anderson, Dan Papp, Tom Tellez, just a ton of good coaches. Who's the throws coach at UGA?
Coach Babbitt?
Babbitt, yeah, Don Babbitt had his podcast because I was coaching throws at Campbell. Wow. So I wanted younger coaches to have something to listen to that could give them, you know, some insight into how to do things. And I, you know, also it gave me an opportunity to get to know a lot of coaches. I think it was a perfect opportunity to, you know, network and make new friends in the coaching community, but also the perfect opportunity to get out information and help younger coaches out. So I was able to kind of kill two birds with one stone with that, you know, and it's been an enlightening experience. I didn't foresee everything else that was going to be going on as far as everything you're doing, Marissa, and, you know, all the shows on YouTube, you know, so there's been a lot of information out there. But like I said, that was just my donation to the coaching community, you know, to to be. And also, you know, you got a lot of good coaches out there that are at smaller schools that nobody knows about them. You know, nobody knows Johnny Beaumont, Wofford, the way that they may know a lot of the better distance coaches that are bigger schools, not better distance coaches, but coaches that are at bigger schools with more athletes. But he's a hell of a distance coach. You know, there's a lot of good coaches out there that a lot of people may not be as familiar with. And I wanted to give them a platform as well to kind of tell their story of how they got into coaching and give their philosophy on training and things of that nature.
You mentioned Johnny Beaumont. Shout out to Coach Beaumont, man. What an amazing guy. I love him to death, man. I've gotten to know him over the past year or so. You're right. Maybe not at that quote unquote big name school, but man, let me tell you what, this guy can coach. Now, most people listening don't know what it goes into a podcast. Now, as the host of the Gill Athletics Connections podcast, I know that it's not just a simple 5-minute process or, you know, just setting up and doing the interview and hitting publish, you know. So this takes time. And while you may not have track meets and things like that today, it's still time out of, you mentioned coaches collab that you're active in and things like that. So you're giving of something. Your time is being used here. How has been for you, what has been the most positive part that you've received?
Just when coaches tell me that, oh man, I got a lot out of that interview. You know, that man, that was the Bell Kearney interview that people constantly tell me was a good interview, and I'm like, it was not me, it was her. You know, it's the guest that make. I always say it's the guest that make the show.
I kind of bank on that, because if it wasn't, the people aren't listening to me. Thank God for the guest, man, because you ain't coming to the Gill Connections podcast for me.
Yeah, I mean, from you know, when you're talking to somebody like that, it can be intimidating. And so, obviously, I tried my best to hold my own and, you know, not stumble over my words or anything. But, when coaches tell me that they really enjoyed that interview and they got a lot out of it, in other interviews, I mean, and when coaches tell me, man, I appreciate what you're doing, you know, I appreciate you, you know, you're doing this, just doing your free time, you're bringing a lot to our, you know, to our sport. That means more than anything for me, to know that I'm actually contributing to our sport in a positive way. Other than coaching and running a team, but the podcast is just my extra, you know, contribution to the sport. So when coaches compliment me, my peers, I mean, that feels good, you know. And I think, you know, I've been able to kind of have conversations now with the likes of, you know, Curtis Taylor and Calvin over at Texas Tech. Me and Calvin talk about barbecue now on the phone and cooking. You know, we were talking last night about, I was asking for some ideas about grilling fish. You know, so it's just, I've been able to make, there's been a lot of positive come out of it for me personally. And obviously, like I said, as long as the coaches like it and they tell me they're getting some out of it, then I feel good about it.
So the four coaches that we talked about, and, you know, like you said, rest in peace, Dave Walker, Jim Patchell, Coach Watts, and Coach Langford. I know you've interviewed two of them. Did you, I don't remember, did you interview Coach Watts?
No, and that's one I want to do. I just hadn't got around. I hadn't to get around to it. There's a lot of coaches left that I want. I got a list. I just interviewed one. It's Danny Williamson, who was at West Carolina for years and went to Lenore Ryan and UNC Asheville. I just interviewed him. He was one of my, I guess I got certain, and Watts is on that list too. I have like goal coaches that I see all the time, but I admire them so much that I'm like, I got to get an interview with them. I'm doing Richie from Arizona. Alabama State. Gonna do his probably. I think it's tomorrow. So these are guys that I just gotta get in. I gotta get Coach Watts in.
I was gonna ask you what's it like interviewing your old boss, especially Coach Patchell. That was, you know, you were an infant back then, right? I mean,
it was fun. And the funny thing about Coach Patchell was, I thought about starting a podcast 3 or 4 years ago. And I just never, that Patchell podcast was from probably 2016.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the first two with Coach Patchell and the next one with Ted Whitaker from Savannah State, who's another mentor. Those were from like 2016. And so, I don't know. I mean, me and Coach Patchell, we talk so much, and it was just fun. It was fun to interview him. I won't even say that it was intimidating at all. When I used to come into his office at Campbell, now that was intimidating, but now it's, you know, it's different now. It was just fun interviewing him. He's so funny, and he doesn't even know that he's funny, which makes him that much more funny.
That's even better.
So, no, it was fun interviewing him, and I always get something out of it when I talk to him. So,
I have a 9-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter, but my 9-year-old is into Pokemon. Oh. I don't know if you know, but I don't know anything about it besides what my son does.
I know what it is.
And so, but I do know enough about it that it's, you know, you got to catch them all, right? That's what I have to be careful personally. There's so many amazing coaches out there. Not only there's so many amazing coaches that I know that's like, man, I want to tell your story. It's so amazing. Mm-hmm. But there's so many coaches I don't know. And it's like, well, what's a better way to get to know someone?
Yeah.
So I have to be careful with that. Because I do have to serve coaches with equipment. So I have to, you know, it's not my only, eventually you got to get back to coaching too, man. So, but out of the, you've done, I think, 30, 40 shows, somewhere around that, maybe 50?
30-something shows.
Out of the ones that you have that are published, which one are you most like, oh, man, I can't believe I got to interview this person?
Man. Yeah, Bev Kearney. I'll say Bev Kearney. Curtis Taylor was a big one for me being a sprints guy and seeing everything that he's done at Oregon. I mean, that's a program that I really admire because my coaching philosophy, and this is just me being truthful, you know, I'm not impressed because people's kids run fast all the time. I mean, I'm impressed with improvement, and Curtis Taylor gets a lot of improvement out of his kids, out of those kids at Oregon. And just knowing where he came from, you know, with Tony Wells, and he had some other mentors too, but I knew he had a tie to Tony Wells. So, you know, he was always somebody I wanted to have a conversation with and pick his brain. So for me, that was huge. Calvin, what they did at the 2019 Outdoor Championships, you know, he's become a mentor of mine. And that for me was a big interview. I'm trying to make sure I'm not forgetting anybody.
No one's going to call you and say, hey, man, because now let's also remember you just named just some giants right there, you know, Bev and Curtis and Calvin. Let's not forget, you did have to go slumming. One of your guests was yours truly. So you were desperate. You needed someone. And I was just there to help you with my big, genuine heart.
No, but seriously, you have been – you know, you've been an inspiration for me while I've been doing this. Somebody that just kind of, cause I, you know, around the time that me and you started talking, you know, I was kind of like, oh man, I'm feeling like my show is a little dry. I need some new ideas. And it was almost like you were just right there, like an angel on my shoulder or something. And you know, we talked and you gave me some good ideas. And so, you know, I'm thankful for that interview, for that contact, that communication with you, you know, and obviously that stayed constant. I mean, this idea was your idea. So, I mean, you just got plenty of them to go around. So I'm thankful for that too, man.
You know, it's funny. I had another coach ask me, because they saw me on your podcast and on Joe Frontier's podcast and Coach McGahee's, he's got a new one as well. And, you know, I've shared and retweeted, and every time I see someone put out an episode like Athletics LLC and Track Talk, the most known unknowns and stuff like that, and I'm always loving it and stuff like that. And then I wrote an article just recently on LinkedIn about all of the track coach focused ones, you're not the ones that are talking about, you know, how to make a kid run faster. That's just not where my passion is. But I had a coach ask me, say, hey, why are you, like, for your case here, why are you pumping up Real Talk with Coach Morton? Like, isn't he competition? And here's what I told that coach. I was like, hey, here's what I truly, truly believe. A rising tide raises all ships. Yeah. If I put someone on to your show, you know, an extra listener who loves your show and your style and the guests that you bring, I'm more than likely to also gain a listener to the Gill Athletics podcast. You know, if I try to like bad, first of all, bad business, bad mouthing coaches who are doing stuff, right? But it would just make no sense. You know, that's a scarcity mindset when you say, oh, I've got to get all the listeners. Mm-hmm. It's a growth mindset when I'm like, dude, I can't get them all, right? Pokemon, I can't catch them all. So the ones that I can't get because of time, et cetera, hey man, go check up Brandon. In fact, I think hopefully you guys are going to connect. I introduced you to a coach. Yeah. I couldn't get him on my schedule. And so I was like, hey man, you know what? Brandon does a great job. Let me introduce you. Let's see if he's got a time slot for you. Because I truly believe two things. One, you do a great, fantastic job on this podcast. But also, I think there are so many coaches out there that have just unique, awesome, common experiences. And I said two opposite words there, unique and common, right? Mm-hmm. We all have unique assets, but we're all going through some of the same things. We're all struggling with no track season right now. A brand new head coach is struggling with, oh my God, there's this much paperwork. Oh wait, I'm responsible for the whole program. You know, those things. Yep. So if we can learn from each other, we'll all get better. And better educated coaches make better educated decisions. And I think that just helps us all. Well, Brandon, as we start to wrap up, what do we have to look forward with Coach Morton, the Real Talk with Coach Morton? Do you have, I don't want to spoil anything, so don't spoil anybody if you don't want to, but what's the future look like for your podcast?
Man, I just want to continue to have guys on, and I just want to continue to sort of educate people on these coaches' stories, and you know, I want to keep it consistent. I want it to be something I can continue to do once our seasons and everything get back rolling. So I like staying low maintenance and you know, it's a simple process for me, you know, as far as putting it together. So I want to keep it that way. That way when work picks up, you know, at Converse, this is something that I can still do. And, you know, my goal with this is to keep it somewhat entertainment, but more education, because I want it to be something that, like a library, you can always refer back to it.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that's the main thing I want with these podcasts. I want coaches. I listen to Vince Anderson's podcast from that Canadian website till this day. I've been listening to that podcast for 13 years now. So him and Tom Tellez, and, you know, so that's my goal for this podcast. I want it to be something that they can refer back to and listen to. And sort of, like I said, sort of like a library. So hopefully that's what happens. And
you gave us a couple of teasers. Any more teasers for upcoming guests?
So I got Richie Bean. I just did Danny Williamson. I can't think of anybody right now. I got some people that I got in mind that I'm pretty sure would be willing to do it. Paul Zalewski over at VTech. He's the jumps coach there. Me and him around the same age. There's a couple other guys. I want to get Cook on here from Bethune-Cookman, the head coach there. These are guys I'm just thinking of that I hadn't even asked them to do it, so I don't know if they're going to do it.
Well, if you're listening right now, coach, guess what? He's asking you. No pressure.
There's a lot of good coaches that I do want to get on here and talk to and, you know, talk about their story. And so we'll see what happens. I don't have anything set in stone yet, but we'll have some good guests coming on.
Well, you have had some amazing guests, so I can't. I'll tell you what, and I know if you're listening right now, you had to have listened to this one already. We've been talking about it, the Bev Kearney interview. I think you just did a fantastic job on several levels, not only as an interviewer interviewing Coach Kearney and what she's done. As a fan, you came across real respectful as well in sharing her story, but also as a historian. I mean, her story needs to be told. The good and the bad portions from the outside looking in needs to be told for coaches around this country and maybe this world on, you know, what you can do even against all odds. I just thought that out of all the podcasts, even over the ones I've done at Gill Athletics, that one remains number one for me. Just the entire authenticity of it, man. It was really, and I know you're listening right now, you know it because you went and listened to it. Maybe you need to go listen to it again because it was phenomenal. Hey, and I know Brandon will never do this, so I'm going to do it for Brandon. I know you are enjoying his podcast. I know I am, and I know the entire track and field community is. Wherever you're listening right now, it's iTunes or Google Podcast, etc. There is two things I'm going to ask you as the takeover. See, Brandon, you can't stop me. I'm taking over, so you can't stop me. I'm going to ask you, dear listener, two things. One, if you are not already subscribed to Real Talk, what are you waiting for? Hit the subscribe button. First of all, it automatically downloads the next episode, so you'll know when he publishes the next episode. It's like the best way to know when he has another great guest on. So one, go hit the subscribe button. Two, depending on what platform you use, go leave a rating and a comment. I know this guy. He's too humble to ask you to do this, but I want to encourage him to continue adding value to the track and field community. So I need your help. I need you to go leave comments and tell him what you do and maybe what you don't like. He's a guy who likes to get better. So leave a comment, leave a rating, be authentic and honest with that rating, and keep listening to Real Talk with Coach Morton and friends. Brandon, I am so thankful that I get to be in that category of and friends now. I'm blessed that a podcast of all things brought us together. I consider you a friend now, and I just want to continue to bless you. I'm so thankful that you would allow me to take over your podcast. I just thought it was just super important that people that do listen to your podcast get to know you as well. You do a fantastic, selfless job of focusing on your guest. I wanted to flip that script and focus on you, man. And so I just hope this blesses you, and I hope it blesses your listeners, and that we can just continue to keep moving on and adding value, man, because you are doing it in bucketfuls, and that is what's needed in today's world, man. So thank you so much, Brandon. For me, all the track and field fans around the country that listen, thank you for what you do, man. Really do appreciate you.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.